Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Revolution are now at 8 games unbeaten in Major League Soccer as they staged a second half 2-1 comeback win over Minnesota United. Dylan Barrero scored his first MLS goal off of a deflected shot that squeaked past Wayne St. Clair, and Gustavo Bo scored the game winner on one of the best free kicks of the season. It was certainly a bittersweet afternoon as the team got a very big 3 points, but they also said goodbye to Matt Turner, who spent his final appearance with the Revolution as an unused substitute. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today is my boss from the Bent Musket, Sam Minton. Sam, how are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. It was definitely a bittersweet day. But, you know, it was nice to give Matt a nice send-off with a win. Definitely good there. But there's plenty to talk about with the New England Revolution. I was a little concerned, but they were able to pull out the W. And now life without Matt Turner begins.
Yeah, and, you know, very frustrating afternoon it started. The first half was very rough, not a lot of offense going. The team seemed all out of sorts. And then the second half, it really came together, and the Revolution were hands down the best team on the pitch. So Revolution taking 3 points at home today. As I said, unbeaten in 8 games. They're starting to be a team that is moving up the table. They are currently tied with Montreal in points for fifth in the Eastern Conference, although Montreal has a game in hand, and they are currently above New England in the standings based on goals scored. But New England right there with 23 points, tied with Montreal. They are 2 points behind Orlando City, 3 behind Philadelphia and New York Red Bulls, and they are just 4 points away from New York City FC, who is in first place, but New York City FC also has 2 games in hand. So New England starting to slowly crawl up that table. Sam, what's your key takeaway from today's match?
Yeah, it was going to be one of my points in my Three Thoughts article after the match, but obviously the Revs and Gustavo Bo were able to get a goal and kind of change that recap. But overall, I think the Revolution are still in search of some missing pieces, and I think the summer transfer window is going to be very crucial. The Revs, they brought out 2 strikers today. You had Josie Altidore and Gustavo Bo working together. And you know, there was definitely some good moments. I thought definitely Gustavo Bo played quite well. But you're still missing that true number 9. You have a guy like Josie Altidore who is good with the hold-up play, but he's definitely, you know, it's clear, you know, he's an older guy. He's had some issues reaching full fitness. You know, Bruce Arena said before the match that he's healthy, but he's still looking to reach that full fitness. So I really think the Revs need a true number 9. Their aerial game has been pretty much, you know, non-existent since Adam Boops has left. That's obviously a key part, but you need a guy who can just constantly come in, score goals, be physical. It was interesting. Even tonight, there were some times where it appeared that Gustavo Bo was almost passing up shots and really looking to distribute the ball, and you really need him to be shooting as much as possible. So definitely think the Revs still need to make a move for a number 9. When it comes to the center backs, you probably could use some depth. Ideally, Omar would have been that guy, but he just hasn't performed up to snuff so far. So the Revs could definitely use with someone who can give Andrew Farrell a break, possibly make Henry Kessler's life easier, because obviously he's dealing with some injury problems as well. And also, too, we saw what the midfield looks like without a guy like Matt Polster. And I think, especially that first half, New England really missed Matt Polster, whether it be defensively or just being a calming influence in the midfield. So maybe you go out and get, whether it be possibly, you know, you could go out for a DP level, but I think more ideally you're looking for a depth signing in that area. So it seems clear to me that the Revs need to make some moves in the summer transfer window. Where they end up making those moves remains to be seen, but really all over the pitch, they could use some improvements, especially if they want to be an MLS contending team without Adam Boutsa and without Matt Turner now.
it's interesting. The central midfield too. I feel like they have a lot of options. They have Martial. Captoum has made his fifth consecutive start. I think he's been playing better, you know, little by little by little. I thought today he had a good game overall. He had a really nice ball over the top to Gustavo Bo, which almost led to a scoring opportunity. You know, Captoum has these games where he's either way off or he's on point. I don't know what his passing accuracy was today, but he played 73 minutes, 40 for 45 passing sets, 89%, 58 touches, you know, 5 for 8 on ground duels. He's had some good moments, but there still kind of is a little bit of consistency issues because Wednesday, I didn't think he looked that great. So, you know, I'm curious to see if Captoum comes along, kind of fills that need in the central midfield. Tommy McNamara, I thought, played okay today, but he got another yellow card early in the game. You know, he's been a yellow card issue all season long. He's one yellow card away from a suspension. Martial, I don't know, you know, is he a late game sub? Is that how Bruce views him? So it's going to be interesting, especially if Matt Polster misses a lot of time. I don't think he will miss a lot of time. But if something was to happen, I think you certainly do need to make a move there. In terms of the striker, though, which I really want to get to, Jozy Altidore, you know, I complimented him the other night. He had some good hold-up play, and that was kind of it in terms of all I could kind of give him credit for. We got a similar performance except without the good hold-up play today. He had 3 shots. None of them looked great. I think they were all blocked. One of them, he had, I believe, Barrero or Heel to his left that he could have centered the ball to. It was like 4-on-3 fast break. Instead, he just kind of blasted the ball into the defender. And even if he didn't, even if it wasn't blocked, it was still a pretty low percentage chance. He was 9 for 16 passing, but I think that number might be a little too high because there were some passes that he swung out to the side that were behind people on the wing, like DeJuan Jones or De La Garza, where they had to kind of step back and get the ball. He did have a chance created, but 20 touches in 67 minutes. So he's touching the ball once every 3.5-ish minutes. Just not a very good performance. It is good to see him get 68 minutes and return to full fitness. Bruce Arena dropped the he's 1 month away from full fitness line again, which again is still concerning. He's been about 1 month away from full fitness for, I feel like, 3 months now. So I don't know if there is something wrong with him physically that is limiting him right now. But I look at the play in the 5th minute, which I was just talking about a second ago with Captoum. Captoum, long ball over the top to Bo. Bo beats his man, gets around his man, low cross to the center. Adam Buxa would have finished that. Adam Buxa would have beaten his man to the ball. He would have scored. It would have been a tap-in. Jozy Altidore just didn't beat his man. There was really nothing there because Jozy Altidore didn't have the quickness and the pace to get off of his defender. It seems like Altidore, when he holds up a ball and he sends it down the wing, he's just not able to get into a good enough position or find separation. Unless a ball's being delivered perfectly to his head, I'm not sure if any of these crosses are going to find him and he's going to score. So, again, maybe we can give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that this is a physical issue, but I'm still very underwhelmed with him overall. And from all the positives I saw on Wednesday, I didn't really see them tonight. So another not great performance from Jozy. And I think I mentioned this a few podcasts ago. If Gustavo Bo is your lone striker, that's fine. But if Gustavo Bo goes down, he has had some injury histories, or if you want to play Gustavo Bo on the wing, what's your answer for up top? Kiz is down at Memphis. I don't think we're seeing him again. Justin Renix, that might be fine. Is it Jozy? I think they were really banking on Jozy to kind of come in and fill Adam Buxa's shoes, and I'm not totally sold on that one. So, yeah, I personally think that they're going to go with the designated player in the midfield. But if, Sam, you're certainly taking the Taylor Twellman route, where you think that 100% they're going out and getting a DP number 9. And honestly, I don't necessarily think that's a bad idea at that stage, at this stage, just because I'm not sure when we're going to get Jozy Altidore 100%.
Yeah, and also, too, just kind of to your point, it seems like he's fully healthy because Bruce Arena spoke to Dan Roach, and he said that he's fully, you know, healthy, you know, I guess physically he's healthy. It's just that he hasn't reached full fitness. And after the match, Tom Quinlan asked Bruce Arena what it means to be fully fit. And Arena responded to saying that it means he can play 90 minutes, he can play a hard 90 minutes. So that seems to be the benchmark for Altidore. And I will say, too, I thought it was quite interesting. Me and Tom Quinlan were in the locker room and he spoke with Jozy. And he kind of mentioned just the difference in playing styles between Toronto and New England. You know, he described Toronto FC as pretty structured, kind of like a well-oiled machine. But he mentioned that here it's different, it's more random, it's more run and gun. And he's saying that it's taken him some time to get comfortable and adjust to it. And it doesn't seem exactly like he's against how New England plays. He recognizes that it works. He just thinks that, you know, he needs to adjust that style of play. So I think there is that kind of interesting point of view where Joji realizes that he has to fit into the structure. You know, it's different than Toronto, and he needs to fit into the structure because it clearly works for New England. So I think that's something else to keep in mind. But like you mentioned, it just seems like every month we hear next month when it comes to Joji reaching full fitness. I understand at the beginning of the season he may have had some physical issues, but for the most part he's been available for games. It's just really getting to that point where he can play a complete 90 minutes. So it's obviously a tough situation. You have to factor in how much New England might be paying him. Obviously, Toronto's basically paying him not to be on the team, so it's pretty rough for him. And I obviously expect that Joji wants to prove Toronto wrong, but it's getting to the point where you need to start seeing some results, or else, like I said, I think you need to go out and get a number nine, because Joji might be a great player off the bench, but he not might not be that guy you can rely on game in and game out.
I know we typically get to listener questions in the second half of the show, but we're kind of circling around a handful that I want to touch on right now before I get to my key takeaway. But one question here, I'll start with David Sibilian. He says, how much time do the Revs have to make a decision if Josie can fill the number nine role? And I think that kind of touches on what we're talking about here. The summer transfer window is coming up. I mean, I don't want to say the clock is running out on Josie, but it's a weird spot because I think. And I know some people, I know Charlie Davies on Extra Time has said this. I know a lot of other people have kind of said this. We speculated this when the Josie Altidore signing was made. It's a 3-year contract. This isn't a 1-year deal. This isn't a we can give up on Josie 2 or 3 months in. And so everything in me kind of tells me like they should go out and get another forward. And if they need to invest, go do it. They have a chance to win MLS Cup this year. Go do it. But I'm just so locked in that this is a long-term plan that Bruce wants to run out Josie and stretch him out and get him to 90 minutes fit. And Bruce is really confident that Josie is going to fit this system and he's going to be the guy. And it's frustrating because I watched the first half of this game and I'm thinking this is points dropped and Josie isn't giving us anything this half. And I know it got better in the second half and we can talk about that later. But part of me looks at this as how long can the Revs run out Josie and drop points in the standings? And I mean, is Josie being here pushing off the decision on whether or not to get another nine? Like, are they gonna, you know, not get another forward? Are they sold on Josie? I guess it's really frustrating. So, how much time do the Revs have to make a decision if Josie can fill the nine role? Like, for me, this season, I mean, I'll say a month, but I mean, if we don't see a whole lot over the next, I don't know, 5, 6 games, I mean, they have to go out and get someone. I don't know if it's whether through a trade in MLS or if they need to go into their scouting network and find a U22 or a designated player guy. But I would say the next 4 to 5 games for Josie Altidore, if he's playing the majority of the game, are very critical. Because if he's not, if he's giving performances like today, I think that's your answer. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, I would agree. You're right. I would probably say like a month's time, but our, you know, 5, 6 games definitely sounds like a good, you know, benchmark for he needs to prove in these games that he can be that guy. You know, Bruce said when they when asked about, you know, replacing Buchsa, talking about, you know, his move, that Josie was brought in with the mind that Adam Buchsa could be leaving. So clearly Bruce has that feeling, but the results so far don't really line up with that, especially now that Buchsa is gone. Ideally, if you are expecting Buchsa to leave and Josie was to be the guy, this would be the time for Josie to step in and, you know, get a run of starts or whatever it may be. So I definitely think he's really running out of time because obviously Altidore was the plan, but clearly that plan I don't think for this season can fully work. Obviously, there's definitely time for Josie by the, you know, end of the season, maybe going into the playoffs to really find his stride. But what if he doesn't? I think you really need to prepare to have a number nine to replace Adam Bubsa. And, you know, obviously there's questions about who that may be. I won't claim to be an expert in the number nine market, but it just seems like they have to make that move in the summer transfer window. This summer transfer window is going to be extremely crucial for this team, whether it be if they get a number nine or just how they increase the team in general. So I definitely would say that the time is running out on Josie Altidore proving that he can be that guy to replace Adam Buchsa. And it's probably, a month's time, 5 to 6 games, where he needs to show that he has that capability. And if not, it might pain Bruce to do so, but he needs to find a guy who will likely get more minutes than Josie.
Yeah, or I mean, they could roll Josie as a substitute and kind of roll with a 4-2-3-1 and put Bo up as the lone striker. I don't know if that's what they want to do. I think that's probably the more likely scenario if the Revs want to invest in a different position. But it's interesting because this is a real, I can totally see Bruce saying we're not in the market for a forward right now. Or what, I know he really rebuked Taylor Twellman last week by saying, Twellman saying that they were 100% going to reinvest in a designated player number nine. And Bruce basically saying, no, that's totally false. He doesn't know what he's talking about. To me, I see this as a logically they got to go out and find a reinforcement up top. But I could see Bruce really having blind faith that Josie's going to pull it out. So I'm curious to see how the next 4 or 5 weeks unfold. Obviously, the best thing for the Revolution and Bruce Arena and for everyone listening to this is that Josie turns it around and he starts to, get physically fit, be 90 minutes fit, and start scoring. But again, another frustrating afternoon for Josie Altidor. So I'm going to get to my key takeaway now. We have some more Josie talk later on and some formation talk later on. We'll get to that later. But I do want to talk about some positives. And since we're talking about Matt Turner leaving, I think I should talk about the goalkeeper position a little bit and talk about Georgi Petrovic. And this felt like a real changing of the guard moment. Petrovic, conceded a penalty kick goal, but some great saves in the first half. Tipped a shot that was looking like maybe it was going for the post or maybe on the inside of the post, but tipped that wide early in the first half. There was a blast of a shot that he dove to the right and saved and didn't give up a rebound on. A couple of good saves. He did have one moment where there was a cross that came in. He blocked it and kind of tapped off the post. He got a little bit lucky there, but overall, some really good moments, some really good reflexes. I'm really impressed with Georgi Petrovic, and yeah, just overall positive marks from him. I feel like if you had told me before the season, before we knew who Georgi Petrovic was, and before we'd ever seen him play, I would have been really concerned about Matt Turner. I thought there was going to be no way we were going to be able to replace his production. And I'm not going to say Petrovic is going to be MLS Keeper of the Year material right away, but he's certainly more than half of Matt Turner. He's certainly more than Brad Knighton. He's certainly more than Earl Edwards Jr. He's certainly more than an average MLS goalkeeper. I think the Revolution have done a really, really great job with this transition to Georgi Petrovic. And I think today was a great afternoon for him. And I'm excited to see this kid play a little bit more. So just positive marks from me on his afternoon. And as I say, with Turner on his way out, felt like a real changing of the guard from one great goalkeeper to another.
Yeah, and it definitely, you can see the potential in Petrovic, and he has that shot stopping ability that you can kind of see in Matt Turner. I think it was his third save of the game when a Minnesota player kind of got in alone and rifled a shot towards him, and he was able to make the save and showed good positioning, but also was able to make some soft stopping. Obviously, like you mentioned, I think there's still some room to grow, get used to. You mentioned that ball that he made the save, but it went off the post. Thought that was definitely lucky. But overall, we're hearing great things about him. Bruce Arena has always been really high on him. Again, after the match today, he said he's a very good goalkeeper for his age. He's just going to get better. He's saying he's getting better every game, and Bruce Arena is really excited to see his progress. And also, too, Turner said that he wasn't the type of goalkeeper that Petrovic was, at Petrovic's age. So it seems like he's a really bright talent. He's already gotten some time with the Serbian national team. Seems like he's going to be a very good goalkeeper. And you can kind of see that confidence in the box. Apparently, he's doing pretty well, communicating to the back line and kind of structuring the defense. So I've been pretty impressed with him. Obviously, it's for a while, it'll probably be a drop-off for Matt Turner. But he has that shot-stopping ability, which I think is the most important. You can teach footwork. You can teach, the style of play in the United States, but just having that pure shot-stopping ability is really important for a goalkeeper, especially kind of getting adjusted to a new league. So I've definitely been impressed with his performance, especially, seeing that his start in the United States was playing with Revs 2 and giving up 4 goals. I think he's really shown that he can be a capable goalkeeper, that he is kind of the future of the position. And I think he put it perfectly. It was a changing of the guard, and now this is Georgi Petrovic's net. He's gonna get a run of starts. He's probably gonna get the majority of the starts for the rest of the season, so he's gonna be able to show what he's capable of. And I think Revolution fans should be pretty excited with how he's performed so far.
Nope, agree with all those points. Very exciting afternoon for Petrovic. And as I say, very sad to see Matt Turner go, but I think we are in good hands. So, also, should probably mention the other young signing of this season, Dylan Barrero. His first career MLS goal came off of a deflected shot. He shot it from the top of the box. It bounced off a defender. Truth be told, I think Dwayne St. Clair probably should have done a little bit better on it. He kind of dove to his left, the ball kind of squeaked underneath him and kind of trickled into the goal. But hey, a goal is a goal. Overall, I thought it was a very, very good game for Barrero. It seems like every performance gets either better and better, or you see more and more flashes of what he can bring. 89 minutes today for the 20-year-old Colombian. Three shots, one goal. All three shots outside of the box, by the way. 22 for 31 on passing. He had 47 touches in his 89 minutes. He was 8 for 10 on ground duels, had five recoveries. So had a pretty good day. He also can run. I mean, it seems like he's out running at least one or two people every day, where he gets sent into space. And I know in the 77th minute, there was a really, really good moment where Carlos Gil sent the ball just way up the left wing, and Barrero just completely ran down the field and took it down to the box. And, Minnesota's defender there, DJ Taylor, did a great job deflecting it and having it go out for, I believe, a goal kick. I believe it bounced back off Barrero, but Barrero, a really good moment from him where he kind of did a stutter and then was looking for Bo inside the box. Exciting moment. Overall, thought he did really, really well. Any thoughts on Dylan Barrero's afternoon, Sam?
Yeah, definitely. It was great for him that he was able to get his first goal. Probably not as beautiful as he was hoping to get, but getting your first goal, that's very important. I was also quite confused because apparently his goal song might be the Dropkick Murphys, The Boys Are Back. I don't know about that. Maybe Dylan Barrero, big Dropkick Murphys fan. Didn't know if they're big in Colombia or Brazil, but I think overall he's a great player. He kind of brings some of that Tejon Buchanan, that confidence on the ball. He's willing to go right at defenders. He has that speed. He's extremely fast. I've definitely noticed that. And he just seems to be really building chemistry with guys like Gustavo Bo and Carlos Gil. And for a guy who just came over here, it's pretty impressive. I think he's going to be a key part of this team as well. He's probably going to be in the starting 11 for the majority of the rest of the season, similar to a guy like Petrovic. But I'm really excited to see what he can kind of become. Obviously, getting him with that U22 initiative is very important, utilizing that and having a young guy who can kind of build his value here in MLS and see where he can go from there. But I've been very impressed. I think, he's going to be a great player for the New England Revolution. And just like Petrovic, Revolution fans should be excited with what they've been able to see so far. And I think he'll be able to do even better things, once he's more comfortable, in the league, with the New England Revolution and just how their style of play. And I think he could really be a key player for the New England Revolution moving forward.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to say he's a clone of Tejon Buchanan. I feel like those expectations for a guy coming into MLS, adjusting right away, maybe that's a little bit high. But you can certainly see the potential. And I think Barrero has carved out probably a starting spot in this team the rest of the season. He's really adjusted very quickly. And you can tell, especially on counterattacks, the Revolution are a lot more dangerous with him out there on the field than with him off it. So I thought another good performance from Barrero. We will have to get some clarification on that goal song. That's a odd choice. I can't imagine Barrero is a big Dropkick Murphys guy. As a 20-year-old South American, I would be shocked if he even knew who the Dropkick Murphys were. I mean, I feel like any 20-year-old in general probably doesn't listen to the Dropkick Murphys. But maybe that's why he came to New England, because he heard of the Dropkick Murphys, and that's maybe half the appeal to it. But that's a very strange goal song choice. I don't know. It's a weird one. They at least think it'd be shipping up to Boston, right?
I was stunned to hear the Boys Are Back. The last time I remember hearing that was like when the Bruins came back from the lockout. It was just really stunning. The fellows in the press box were quite confused. But hey, for all I know, maybe the Dropkick Murphys are just humongous in Colombia.
Well, I believe that used to be the Revs' goal song in general before they started doing personalized ones. So maybe that was a generic thing or something like that.
Yeah, they just haven't gotten to it yet, I guess.
Maybe. I don't know. It's like Sorry for the Philadelphia reference, everyone, but it's like Nick Sirianni got hired as the Eagles head coach, and he like shows up in like all this like Philadelphia gear, and he says John a lot, and he intentionally goes out of his way to kind of do Philadelphia things, and it's really kind of like a try-hard move. Maybe this is Dylan Barrero's way, his try-hard way of fitting in with Boston. So if you talk to him after the game, and he starts talking about like Yad and stuff like that and doing a weird Boston accent, maybe he's just being a try-hard. I don't know. One more thing here, too, I want to note before we move on. Ben Rivino making his MLS debut. Need to note that as well. I found this interesting that he came into this game because we've talked about the Scott Caldwell role, the closer's role before, kind of the guy you throw in at the end of games to close it out. The Revs had a one-goal lead today, and they put on Ben Rivino in the 90th minute, which I thought was very interesting. Not Omar Gonzalez, which I thought was doubly interesting. Sam, what are your thoughts about that Ben Rivino sub, and did you take anything away from that?
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting just because, obviously, Ryan Spalding came into the game for DeJuan Jones after DeJuan Jones went down. I will say that DeJuan looked rather fine in the locker room, so I wouldn't be too concerned about that. But I thought it was interesting because it looked like Rivino was kind of playing a hybrid midfielder role, but also kind of being a member of that back line. Obviously, there was a key header that he had late in the game where it looked like he was more in the back line, but when he came to the match immediately, he was playing more of a midfield role, and I remember the Reds were kind of cycling the ball up the field, and all of a sudden you have Carlos Gil and Ben Rivino next to each other trying to get the ball up the field, which I thought was pretty interesting. But so I thought that was interesting. You have a guy like Ryan Spalding who's kind of used to playing in the midfield. He did down in Reds too, so you could have easily had him and maybe have Rivino play outside back. He does have some experience playing that position, but I think, you know, it lends to the point you mentioned. He came on instead of Omar Gonzalez. Obviously, he could have easily had a three-man back line, a group of three center backs with Farrell, Bell, and Omar. But you brought in a young guy like Ben Rivino, recently signed that first-team deal. I think it's quite interesting. So definitely something to keep an eye on. But glad that he was able to get his first MLS minutes. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he's used moving forward. Or, you know, do we start seeing him outside back? Do we see him in maybe that kind of hybrid midfield position even more? Or do we get to even see him replace a guy like Andrew Farrell who might need some rest? Or having Kessler comes back and needs some rest, he gets some center back time. It will be interesting, but definitely congrats to Ben Rivino for getting his first MLS minutes.
Yes, James Downing joined us on Twitter Spaces last week and said he wanted he was confused that there was no Ben Rivino in Revs 2 or the Revs game last weekend. And here he is. We freed Ben Rivino. Interesting. We did get a question from John Bilkin asking what position Rivino was playing. It did seem kind of like a floating defensive midfielder / right midfielder. At one point, he dropped back and was kind of playing a right back to AJ De La Garza's right when Minnesota was pushing up the field and had a long cross in, which Rivino kind of nicely defended away. So obviously it's 5 minutes. Obviously it's probably shifting and you're kind of on the back foot. But if you watch those 5 minutes, just kind of keep your eye on Ben Rivino. I went back and watched, he's certainly playing above the back line. So he was kind of playing in a midfield area. And when they drafted him, I think a lot of the appeal was he could play all along the back line. He was a right back / center back, at UCLA. You know, he's over 6 feet. He's an athletic kid. It wouldn't shock me if they believe he can kind of fill a defensive midfielder role, and especially with Polster out, if Tommy McNamara is out due to yellow card suspension, if Maciel is hurt, he's had some injury issues, you know, with kind of a rotating door at center back, it's not a bad idea to have someone with an athletic person with defensive instincts kind of get a few minutes here and there above the back line in the defensive midfield. So, I don't know exactly what you'd qualify that position as, but I think midfield is certainly a way to classify it. So congrats to Rivino on his first career MLS start, or not MLS start, MLS appearance. And before we get into the rest of our listener questions, we wanted to take a minute and talk about our sponsor, Golazo Kits. Golazo Kits' mission is to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home with a catalog of jerseys, jackets, scarves, and more from clubs and national teams from over 80 countries in the world. They have United States men's national team merch. They have women's team merch. They have Revolution merch. They have merch for Arsenal, for RC Lens, for Club Bruges. For any European club you support, they have it. So go check out golazokits.com. and find whatever you need for your closet. And if you're not sure what you want or you don't find something you love, you can check out their mystery kit packages where you enter in your size and what style of jersey that you like, and Golasso will surprise you with the kit of your dreams. So go check out GolassoKits.com right now for their full selection, and make sure you follow them at Golasso Kits on Twitter and Golasso Kits on Instagram for updates on their new inventory. They update their inventory every single week with unboxing videos, so you'll be the first to know about it if you follow them on social media. And when you find something you like, please use promo code REVSRECAP to save 15% off your order. That is promo code REVSRECAP at GolassoKits.com for 15% off your order. Links and code are in the show notes. All right, Sam, let's get to some listener questions here. And we kind of touched on this a little bit already, but we'll start with Nathan here. The formation going forward should be a single striker, Gustavo Bo up top. There isn't enough quality on the team for two starting strikers. I agree with this 100%. I think, obviously, this isn't how it's going to go down because Bruce wants to stretch out Josie, and they need to figure out what they have in Josie. And as I said, if Josie's going to be a bust, we need to figure that out in the next month. So we're going to run out Josie, and it's probably going to drive everyone on everyone in New England crazy, so I don't think this is the way that they're going to go through it the next few games. But in my opinion, this is the formation right now. I think Gustavo Bo, I'm not sure if this is Bo's best position. I think he might work better with a second striker, but right now I think the 4-2-3-1 is the best formation. And one more thing, Mocha says, do you agree the best formation is 4-2-3-1 with Bo's the lone striker? Josie seems to kill off a lot of counterattacks. I agree with both those questions. I don't have a whole lot more to add. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I will say that after the match, me and Tom Clinton were able to speak with Omar Gonzalez in the locker room, and he mentioned that they made the formation change at half. Obviously, had two strikers, and then they changed to more of a 4-2-3-1. And I would just have to agree that it seems to be the best formation, especially now that Adam Buksa is gone. You don't have to worry about starting both Bo and Buksa. Obviously, there is the case of Altidore, and if you're going to commit to a 4-2-3-1, that might mean playing Gustavo Bo at a position because you have a guy like Dylan Barrera who seems to do very well on that left side. But I think it really is the best formation. You have the wings, and Omar also mentioned it was important to kind of have those wing players. You have Dylan Barrera bombing up the left side along with DeJuan Jones. You have the flexibility of who you want to play on the right. You have Carlos Hill kind of in the middle patrolling things. And they just seem to be overall much better with a single striker. There was obviously that point when New England struggled to get both Bo and Buksa on the field, and they were really committing to that 4-2-3-1. And it just seems like it's the best formation for them. Obviously, I think having Bo as your only striker has some pros and cons. You know, he's definitely able to get his shots up, and I think he's improved hold-up play and tracking back overall, but he's not really that traditional number nine. Also, too, want to give credit to him for his movement. I thought these last two games he's been really good at making runs, so I will give him credit there, but he's not really that traditional number nine. So it would be interesting to see if he does kind of go out and he's dependent to be that guy, that lone striker up top. But it seems to be the best solution for New England. Obviously, we've talked about possibly going out to get number nine. Maybe that plays a role in it as well, too. But right now, it seems to be the best position. It seems to be our formation seems to be where New England's the most successful. If it isn't broke, do not fix it. And if that means putting Josie on the bench, I mean, so be it. Obviously, you want to worry about his fitness. But it just seems the best move for the team is playing with a single striker, and that striker most likely being Gustavo Bo.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't want to add too much to it because I agree 100%. We got another question here about the striker position. Matt on Twitter says, it's a few comments here, but he says John Bell over Omar. Barrera was excellent. I think we agree with both of those. By the way, I had some negative thoughts on Bell's performance on Wednesday. I thought he played very well. I think he's doing a little bit better. He seems to be adjusting a little bit better, coming back from injury. I think if Kessler's out, Bell has won the job. I think I've seen enough to really solidify him over Omar Gonzalez. I don't know if you have any thoughts on John Bell's performance or where the depth chart is, but I just wanted to follow up on Wednesday's John Bell talk with. He gets some good marks from me today. Any thoughts on that, Sam?
Yeah, I will say that I think, too, he is kind of locked down that third spot, but there was definitely some times, obviously, it's Emmanuel Reynoso, very talented a player for Minnesota United, but there were some times where Reynoso was completely dominating him, and, I mean, maybe that's just a good player. doing what he does. But I think there was definitely some rough moments for Bell. But I definitely think you saw later in the game, just having his athleticism, ability to get up and head those balls and clear those balls out of Newman's box, very important. I would still say on the depth chart, he's probably ahead of Omar. And I think, you know, he has some potential, and you have to remember that he is still kind of learning the position. But overall, you know, he said last game he probably had a C performance. I'd probably agree with him even for this game. But he's kind of trending in the right direction, so that's definitely good. But overall, you know, I would say a solid performance. There were some times where you have to see, you know, the good parts of John Bell, but there's some times, whether it be just getting dominated by his opponent or just playing balls, not making, I would say, the smartest decisions. There were some moments there, but also credit to him in that scuffle in the second half. He was very quick to get up in that. John Bell plays no games. He was the enforcer with Polster and Kessler out.
Yeah, the last guy I think I'd want to fight is John Bell. He's a very imposing figure. So, yeah, overall, pretty positive night from John Bell. Matt, getting back to Matt's comment here, though, he says, Josie, not good enough to be more than a substitute. Any thoughts on who you would bring in as a designated player to fill the number nine role? These are always tough questions because you don't really know contract situations around the league. I feel like you're either talking about a designated player that you can bring in from really anywhere. I know there's been some talk about Kyle Larin, which I think Charlie Davies on Extra Time said he doesn't really believe. But those whispers have been kind of around and maybe a possible fit for the Revolution. If you're not talking a designated player, you're probably talking about a depth signing, or not necessarily depth signing, but maybe not as big of an impact signing. You might be talking about a U22 player of someone we don't know really just yet. I can't say I have an in-depth knowledge of, you know, players that are 20 or younger, or you're talking about players in MLS, and it kind of depends on contract situations. So just kind of looking at the standings, maybe guys to go after. I think Ola Kamara was potentially on the trading block previously this season. DC United is having a rough season. Chicago is having a rough year. Maybe Casper is back on the trade block. I know he just got there. I don't know what his contract situation is. San Jose, maybe they pay a large amount for Bobasi, I guess. I'm not so sure what his contract situation is or if San Jose would even entertain that offer. So I'd have to kind of click around to see who in MLS would be selling. It's really hard to tell right now who is selling because it is halfway through the season. No one's really out of a playoff spot right now, so we don't really know who the Revs could kind of pick off and who's selling. So my guess would be they go outside for a designated player if they were to upgrade there and really just kind of go for it and just kind of eat the Josie contract and have him be kind of a luxury player. That would be my guess. I don't have any other specific names that I can say. Sam, anything to add on to that?
Yeah, I would definitely say that it will be interesting to see if the Revs get a player like Kyle Warren. I thought that it would be a decent move for them. I remember listening to Extra Time and Matt Doyle threw that out there. So it would be interesting to see a guy like him. Obviously, I believe he's playing over in Turkey with the Secret. Yeah, I probably butchered that name. But he's out of contract now, so he's been doing, I would say, quite well with the Canadian men's national team. So he'd be a great signing. Maybe Tejon can work some magic there. But it would be interesting to see a guy like Ole Kamara. Definitely has had some impressive moments with DC. If they were able to snag him, I think that would be good. San Jose, I don't think they're going to get rid of Ibiasi. I also don't think New England probably either wants to take a chance on Cade Cowell, or Cade Cowell probably is eyeing up a move to Europe compared to a inter-MLS move. So that would be interesting. I will say, you know, we have talked about maybe Bruce just doesn't want to make a move at the position. I think we all probably wish he would. But if he's really going to trust the process with a guy like Josie, I will say probably kind of a under-the-radar name. But there's Marcos Diaz on Revs 2. And, I mean, obviously it's a Revs 2 player. But he was getting 13 minutes down in Brazil. And from everything I've seen with him with Revs 2, he seems like a pretty quality striker. And obviously he'd be a different type of player compared to Adam Buxa. But he seems to have a lot of promise. And I think ideally, when you look at that second team, he's, I would say, next in line to possibly get a first team deal. So obviously, you know, it's probably far down the radar. I wouldn't expect it to happen. But he's there waiting. Maybe you bring a guy like that up and see what he's able to do if Bruce is of the mind of, let's see what Jozy Altidore can do. He's going to get back to full fitness. Trust in Jozy. If he has that mindset, you might see them look internally to a guy like Marco Diaz. But I would say overall, Myron definitely sticks out to me. Would be interesting to see a guy like Kamara possibly get some time. He's a very talented striker. But I'm also not an expert in the number nine transfer market. So knowing Bruce, knowing the scouting department, they have plenty of guys out there. They definitely honed in on South America, so maybe that's an area of the world to keep an eye on. But it will be interesting to see if New England gets number nine, who that is, because I think it's a lot of unknown, and there's a lot of possibilities of where they could go with that position.
The other thing, too, with Marcos Diaz that might be an issue is that the Revs currently don't have a supplemental roster spot to promote from Revs 2. So they would have to probably move someone. They have to make a trade. I don't know if they could loan someone. I think they could loan someone to Revs 2 if they haven't made an appearance. So maybe Noel Buck, I think, is still eligible that you could loan down and kind of get him off the senior roster temporarily and promote Marcos Diaz. I'm not totally sure if they could work that, but either way, there might be some kind of roster maneuvering around to promote Marcos Diaz if they do that. But that is a good shout. Certainly a lot of people very, very impressed with him in a very short period of time. So all good thoughts. But as you say, Sam, if they do make a move for a nine, I can almost guarantee it's someone that I'm not even thinking about or is not on my radar. And that's if Bruce isn't trusting the process with Jozy Altidore, which if I'm a gambling man, I think he sees out for the rest of the season. So Ryan says Petrovic had a hell of a game. Agreed 100%. While we're talking about goalkeepers, we just got a question in from Charles Maddock. Don't know if it's too late, but what kind of legacy does Matt Turner leave, and does he fit into a Revs best 11? Sam, what kind of legacy does Matt Turner leave, and does he fit into the Revolution best 11, which is basically just saying Matt Rhys or Matt Turner? I think that's a translated way of answering that question, but let's get to the legacy question first.
Yeah, I mean, I think he leaves behind a great legacy, just the fact that if you look at some of the signs in the crowd, he was mentioned, there were signs saying that kids became goalkeepers because of Matt Turner. And obviously just his story, third string goalkeeper out of Fairfield, now U.S. men's national team, arguably top goalkeeper, as well as just dominating the New England Revolution, leading them to a supporters shield and being the best goalkeeper in MLS. It's quite a legacy, and I think, you know, Revolution fans are going to remember him fondly for pretty much eternity. He just means so much to the club, and you can see how much the club means to him. So I definitely think the legacy is there. I know my colleague, Seth McCumber, said, I believe he said that Rhys is probably still the best goalkeeper. But for me, I would say that Matt Turner has it, just because obviously he was able to get them a supporter shield. I believe he has the best win percentage out of any goalkeeper, pretty important. And he also, too, is eighth in MLS's history in win percentage for a goalkeeper with minimum 20 wins. So he's really done a great job. He also has the clean sheets. Those have definitely been great. And he's really just burst onto the scene. And I think part of his legacy will be his effect on the future, because obviously he's going to go over to Arsenal. He's not just going to be Matt Turner. He's not just going to be Matt Turner, American goalkeeper. He's going to be Matt Turner, former New England Revolution goalkeeper. He's going to go to Qatar. And when he's in net for the United States men's national team, he's not just going to be an Arsenal keeper. He's not just obviously going to be an American keeper. He's going to be a former member of the New England Revolution. So I think it's going to be big for the club. I think just the impact he's made will be felt for a very long time. And I thought, you know, credit to him too. I asked him what he's going to miss most about New England. And he basically said that it's like everyone. Like, he said he's going to miss the people. He said he's going to miss the media, the fans. He even gave a shout out to Cynthia McGrath, who hands all the players food and the training staff. And it just tells you the type of guy he is. So I think he's going to be remembered as probably the top goalkeeper to ever play for the New England Revolution. I definitely understand that Matt Rhys, obviously a great goalkeeper, definitely has Matt Turner beaten some stats. But I think just the fact that he was able to finally get them that supporter shield, what he's going to have an impact on in the future. You know, everyone in England's going to have to hear about the Newland Revolution every time he's between the net for a while, especially when he's starting off. Maybe that attracts more names or whatever it may be. But his legacy, he'll be remembered as an amazing part of just Revolution Nation as a whole, amazing part of the community, and just for being an amazing goalkeeper. And his story, I mean, he'll probably get a movie made out of him. It's absolutely insane. Apple TV Plus days came out with a TV deal. They might want to start working on the Matt Turner movie and have it make it be an Apple TV Plus exclusive. It's just an amazing story, and credit to him just for he's put in all the hard work. Obviously, coming out of Fairfield, easily could have just given up and resigned to, you know, not making it to them unless they're being a pro. But now he's going over, he's playing for Arsenal, his favorite club, and he put in the work, and he deserves all the credit for all he's been able to do.
Yeah, I think in terms of the Reese versus Turner, I think I lean Turner, but I think there's certainly a lot of good arguments for Matt Reese at this stage. Certainly he's got the longevity argument, but I think in terms of the height Matt Turner has reached, Arsenal, the United States men's national team, you know, potentially the World Cup starting goalkeeper, I think those achievements are just too high to ignore. So I'd give the nod to Matt Turner. With that being said, in terms of his legacy, I think if you look at the last few years of the Revolution, I mean, just, you know, if you go back to a podcast that when we were doing this in 2018 or early 2019 during the Brad Friedel years, the team was completely different. There really wasn't a whole lot of positives going on. That was Matt Turner's rookie season. And you look at, you know, the Bruce Arena era and everything that has kind of turned around and how the expectations here are different, how it's a really kind of different business. The structure and the foundation of this team is totally different from 2018 when it was just kind of a floundering, you know, club in MLS. And a lot of people will credit Bruce Arena for that, and rightfully so. But I also think Matt Turner is one of the building blocks of where the team is today, and certainly the winning culture and all that. I think, you know, a lot of it obviously starts with Bruce Arena. I think Matt Turner is also one of the reasons we have that kind of foundation. You know, he certainly came in, led by example, started from the bottom, ended up going to Arsenal, kind of is hitting the highest of heights. And you're right, wherever he goes, he's going to be associated with the New England Revolution. We talk about Adam Buxa going overseas and how Adam Buxa is a story that they can now go to young European talent and say, see, look at what we did for Adam Buxa. And you know, same thing with Tejan Buchanan. And Matt Turner is going to be a part of that as well. So hopefully Matt Turner's legacy is he's kind of the first generation of Revolution players that have been a success here and then have gone on and graduated and been a success elsewhere and has made the team better for it. And as I say, in 20 years, if the Revolution kind of continue this momentum and continue this growth and continue this success, I think those, the not just the 2021 team that won the Supporter Shield, but if you look at the 2019-2020 teams that kind of started going in the right direction, you know, I think those teams will be remembered fondly, and Matt Turner obviously was such a huge part of that. So let's get to some other questions here. Traeger Durati says, watching on TV, the crowd sounded great tonight. I'm hoping they can continue to draw a crowd this size without a special event surrounding it. Certainly was a little disappointing that Matt Turner did not play tonight. I think a lot of people expected him to play. I did see it was rumored that Arsenal asked him either not to play or have his minutes limited since he is going to be reporting for preseason soon. Thought that whole thing was a bit weird, but it is what it is. Matthew says, what changed between halves number one and halves number two that switched the momentum in favor of the Revs? Sam, what changed at halftime?
Yeah, you know, I'll trust Omar for his words. It's that formation. I know Bruce was kind of asked about it, and he just kind of said, you know, he gave, I guess you could say, a little of a pep talk in the locker, motivation speech in the locker room at halftime. But I definitely would say that, you know, changing the formation and getting some new guys in there, some fresh legs, I think played a great role. Because like we mentioned time and time again, this team just plays so much better with that 4-2-3-1. You know, utilizing the wings, you have that speed in guys like Barrero, Dejuan Jones. When Ima Boateng's in the game, you have him. And this team just seems like better in a 4-2-3-1. They just seem to do a lot better with one striker. So I'll give credit to the coaching staff for the tactical change and kind of motivating the guys, because It looked pretty grim in that first half. It was a pretty boring half of soccer, and the Revolution just kind of looked lifeless. But that second half, they came out and they were able to get those two goals and get the 3 points. And it's a crucial 3 points, especially considering the start of the season. So good on the coaching staff for recognizing that and making the required changes and, adjusting to the game that was in front of them.
I also think too, not just in terms of the formation, but it seemed like to me, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I might have to look at like a first half heat map and a second half heat map, but I feel like Barrero played a lot more on the left wing in the second half, but that seems to be where he's a lot more comfortable to me. That just seems like something I've noticed, where on the right side, he seems a little bit, kind of some more turnovers, kind of more some sloppy play, whereas on the left side, he just seems a little bit more comfortable playing on that side. So yeah, I thought, but I second everything you said there, but I just wanted to tack on that Barrero, I think switching to the left side and playing a little bit more on the left side in the second half seemed to also have a positive effect as well. Rennie Swan says, somebody else said it, but can we get a redo on the Toronto FC fire sale and just skip that? What was interesting is while we were looking for names of strikers, I was looking at teams that might be selling, and I just skipped over Toronto FC because I think I'm kind of done with former Toronto FC players. Yeah, I think I wish we could get a redo. Certainly, I wish we could get a redo on Omar Gonzalez. I guess we're still TBD on Josie Altidore. But yeah, those moves still not looking great another week in. Did get another question here from David Sibillion. He says, how does the flush of Apple TV money in 2023 change player acquisition strategy for the Revolution, if at all? I believe the Revs want to make Josie work if they can save a designated player spot for 2023. Or it could be more U22 players. Obviously, if the Revs have two designated players used, or two senior designated players and one young designated player, they get three U22 slots instead of one U22 slot, which I think could be the methodology here. I did get a comment here from James Downing, who says that Allocation Disorder, which is a podcast on the Total Soccer Show feed, they provided what the Apple TV deal meant for the team and for the salary cap, and they kind of estimated around 1.9 million being added to the cap, and each team would be getting about $7 million from the Apple TV deal instead of the current $2 million. So it certainly will be lining the Revolution's pocketbook a little bit. Would I think that changes the player acquisition strategy much in 2023? I don't think so, because the Revolution have a pretty big pool of money from their sales, from the Matt Turner, the Tajon Buchanan, and the Adam Buxa sale. At the very least, it's about 20-ish million, depending on if you believe the $6 million or the $10 million transfer fee number for Adam Buxa. They've spent about $5 million of that, so they have about $15 million to spend. Even if they go out and buy another designated player for $5, $6 million, they still have probably double-digit, transfer fees to work around. Maybe you can say some of that is offset in the players they've acquired this year. They're spending more in salary and whatever they're paying Josie, Sebastian, Legette. But ultimately, I think they have a lot of money. That the Apple TV money, it certainly will help, but I don't think it's going to change a ton on the landscape of U22s or designated player. I think either way, they have money to spend, and they're going to go out and get whoever they think is best. And if not, a lot of questions should be asked. So that's my thought. I'm not putting too much stock on the Apple TV money, but it will certainly add some green in the accounting books. So, Sam, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that question at all.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I think this whole Apple TV thing will be interesting, because I believe even if you have an Apple TV Plus subscription like myself, you'll still have to pay. We obviously don't know the fee. I believe Variety reported that's $20 to $30 a month, which, in my opinion, is pretty steep. Might have to be asking the MLS to comp that for me. But I don't think it will make too much of an impact. And just based on the fact that I don't know how it will perform, I think you might be able to get the diehard fan of a team. But when it comes to casuals, I don't think you're really going to draw them in with it being on Apple TV Plus and having to pay $20 to $30 a month. And I think also, too, Bruce Arena said it himself, Robert Kraft isn't really, at least according to Bruce Arena, isn't necessarily afraid to spend money. So I don't think it would make too much of a difference getting whatever money you may get from an Apple TV deal. But I think the deal will be interesting, just seeing how it goes. Obviously, there's the whole local broadcasters thing, which is quite interesting. They're kind of in limbo for the rest of the season before figuring out if they're actually going to be calling games next season or not. And just overall, especially if it is that $20 to $30 a month price tag, I don't know how many people you're going to get or if you're going to really expand your base by doing this deal. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes out. Hope it's not $20 to $30. If it is, I'm going to be hitting up Don Garber, telling him he can pay for it for me.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I talked about this a little bit on Twitter Spaces, so I don't want to repeat my thoughts to everyone who listened to Wednesday's podcast. But to me, this shows me that they're fine being a niche secondary sport that's not going to crack into the big four. It's very disappointing. It's a long term deal. What is it, 10 years?
Yeah.
I mean, to think I got to pay $30 a month for the next decade to watch the Revolution, it sucks. And I'm glad someone, I think Corey made this point on Rev's Twitter today. He said, yeah, it's great season ticket holders get this for free, but, you know, don't you think they're also going to jack up your season ticket costs? You know, they're probably going to do that.
Yeah.
They're probably, you know, it's like when I went to college, they gave us a free laptop, but also, you know, how much am I paying in tuition? You know, obviously that's coming out of the tuition bill too. So I don't know. I certainly think being off ESPN is disappointing. I think having no local coverage is disappointing. I think WBZ has been doing a very good job the past couple of years, and you wonder if their interest is going to be there. And also, I think if you're going to take away Brad and Charlie Davies, you know, and instead you're going to replace them with two generic guys who kind of cover teams and, you know, don't know the ins and the outs of the team, I think it takes away from the broadcast quality. I you know, certainly there's homers in broadcasting, but also there's a lot of knowledge of those teams specifically. So I'm hopeful that there aren't too many changes to this Apple TV deal. And I'm very hopeful that $20, $30 subscription fee is not true, because I think not only are they going to not get casuals, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if a lot of people tune out of the league that are currently watching. So, hey, Sam, I got your thoughts on the Apple TV deal. The World Cup announcement came between our last episode and now. What are your thoughts about the World Cup announcement in Boston making the cut?
I will say, out of the press box, I was probably the one saying they're not going to get it. I was very negative. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe just being with the Reds for so long, you just prepare for disappointment and hope for the best. But I think it's going to be really big. Obviously, if you look at soccer in the region as a whole, it's going to be very big having the World Cup possibly, you know, get you some fans for the Revolution. But it's going to be really big. I'm excited. Hope to hopefully still be covering the team and still be in the area to cover some games, because that would be an amazing opportunity to be able to do that. But I think overall, it's very good. Bruce Arena mentioned that they're going to get a permanent grass field. Now, obviously, they're going to have that for the World Cup. How long that lasts, can't tell you that. But he used the words himself, a permanent grass field. So I think Revolution fans will be excited about that. But it'll be interesting to see how it works out, too, because obviously it gets the announcement, yep, the World Cup is coming to Boston, but that's not really the case. It's coming to Foxborough. It'll be interesting to see how many people enjoy the Red Robin, the local TV12 store, or the various establishments over at Patriots Place. And it'll be interesting to see just how everything works there. But it'll be very big, I think, for the region as a whole. Obviously, there's a whole situation going on in Rhode Island, looking to get a stadium and team there. You have Vermont Green FC kind of kicking things off. And you have, I believe, Charlie Davies associated with a New Hampshire team. It really seems like the sport's growing in the region, and now having a World Cup come, you can grow the fan base, but also get people to travel here, bring in that revenue. I think it's going to be very important, and it's going to be great for the game, and it'll also just be great to possibly be able to witness some World Cup games. That's pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime experience for anyone to be able to say, hey, I've been to a World Cup. Not a lot of people can afford to fly to Qatar or wherever it may be. So it brings that to the New England area and getting to watch some world-class talent. I know personally I'll be voting for the U.S. men's national team, Brazil, Portugal, or France to get a game. But whoever comes, it's going to be a great opportunity for people to watch the game, to fall in love with the game, and really for the region as a whole to grow the game and become, I guess, if you want to call it, a soccer state or a soccer region. So definitely good for the Revolution, good for I know Brian Biello is very happy. I have to assume Robert Kraft is very happy. But it's really, I would say, a win-win for everyone, besides probably D.C., who it's quite stunning that our nation's capital didn't get a World Cup game, but at least Foxborough got one. At least we can say that.
I felt bad for our friends at Cincy Soccer Talk too. Cincinnati also left
Oh,
out in the
yes.
cold. That's a rough one. That one is a rough one. They host pretty much every them and Columbus host every like U.S. game, and then they lose out. But another thing too, you list off all the teams in New England. You missed Hartford Athletic. I know we don't consider Connecticut a New England state, but if you
I'm
do,
sorry, Connecticut. I'm sorry, Jake.
If you do, we haven't had Jake on in a long time. I haven't insulted Connecticut enough on this podcast lately, so we'll have to get him back on in the future. While we're on the topic, we did get another comment here from Dolan. He says, "What was your favorite part of this weekend?" And he wants my thoughts on gas station Saran wrapped donuts. You did a road trip up to Vermont to check out some USL League Two soccer. Sam, report back to us. How was the weekend? What was your favorite part?
It was definitely a blast. Shout out to all the team there, Patrick and Matt Wolf. It was great to meet both of those guys, but it was definitely a blast, and I thought it was a great atmosphere. We have kind of just in a whole entire experience, article in the works, and obviously Dolan was up there to get photos, but I was really impressed with the crowd. I want to give credit to the PA announcer, who might probably be the best PA announcer I ever heard. My favorite comment might be him saying at halftime that if someone wants to buy him a beer, he'd be greatly appreciated. And someone bought him a beer, and I think that just tells you how great of a fan base and kind of community Vermont has built. Tom Proctor, that's his name. Shout out Tom Proctor. But I was really impressed overall with the amount of fans that were there. It was rainy. It was not a good day, but they still braved the weather. I saw actually some New England Revolution supporters out there. Also got to try their Go Green beer, their club beer, and not a big beer guy, but I was pretty impressed. And also the bottle just looked amazing, so credit to them. And there were some really talented players. They have their own striker from Iceland, and me and Dolan both think he kind of obviously not same talent wise, I'd say, but he's a physical guy. He's able to just bowl people off the ball. Really reminds me of Adam Bucha. But overall, it was an absolute great time. Love the jerseys. Love the experience. Love the vibe. And I mean, if you're in the area, if you're able to catch a game there, couldn't recommend it enough. It was just an absolute blast. So make sure to check out that article. It'll be on the Bent Musket soon. And it'll also include the fact that I got a donut that was wrapped in Saran wrap, from a gas station. Some people think that's a questionable decision. My digestive system says it was an okay decision, and I had friends reach out and say that it was a good decision. So it tasted good, I'll say that. So but I'll let you give your thoughts on Saran wrap donuts from gas stations, Jared.
Well, before I do that, so this is in Burlington, Vermont, just to be clear.
Yes, it's on the campus of Vermont, the University of Vermont. Shout out to my sister. She'll be going there. So I was familiar with the area. It's in Burlington, Vermont. Virtue Field is where the Vermont soccer team plays, right on campus. There's plenty of restaurants in downtown and kind of South Burlington area. Obviously, me and Dolan were kind of strapped for time, so we just hit up a local Moe's to get some Mexican fast food. But there's plenty of restaurants, plenty of bars, and it's just a really cool area overall. And for instance, the club's really committed to climate justice, social justice, and they were giving out plants the first 50 stands, and it was so wild to pull into the parking lot and see someone with like a tomato plant, and it was just absolutely awesome. So they're building a great atmosphere, and couldn't recommend it more. It's just a fun night, whether you're a college kid or if you're a family. Perfect atmosphere for everyone, so definitely would recommend it.
One more comment here. James Downing says he wants to say happy first Father's Day to Sean. Sean, spending
Aww.
Father's Day off of the podcast, happy first Father's Day to Sean, and also happy Father's Day to Chris, who spent the day at the Revolution game. I don't know if he brought any of his kids, but if not, hopefully it was a happy Father's Day with the day off, celebrating Matt Turner's career. So happy Father's Day to my co-hosts and to all of our listeners who are fathers, James included.
Also, shout out to Seth and Matt, who are also fathers.
Yes, Seth and Matt, also who are fathers at the Bent Musket. Happy Father's Day to you guys as well. Anything else before we wrap up?
I just have to ask. So you mentioned the World Cup. I know there are some plans in the works to possibly go to Philly and record from a Waffle House. Me, you, and Dolan. Are those plans still in the work? And if not, I have a solution. I say you come down to Massachusetts for a game in Boston, and we do it from an Applebee's.
We can do both, and it doesn't have to be the World Cup. We can talk about this off air, but yes, it's all in the air. Let's go to all the World Cup games. I don't care. Let's go to New York. Let's go to DC.
They won't cost a lot.
No, but I'll be rich by 2026. All the Patreon money and all that stuff is going to roll in. Yeah, we can afford to go to all the World Cup games in 2026. Why not?
Yeah, let's do it.
That wraps us up here today. You can follow us. Oh, Sam, where can people find you on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at Sam_Manson22. Also, make sure to check out the Bent Musket at the Bent Musket. Definitely have all your coverage from today's match and moving forward. Then I have something on Vermont Green FC. Definitely make sure to check that out. But yeah, definitely follow me there. Definitely, if you can talk to John Bell, some Ryan Spalding, or just overall what the Rebs are listening to in the locker room. It was Donna Summers today, Greg. I thought that was interesting. So shout out to Donna Summers. But definitely make sure to get me a follow. We would love to chat some Newman Revolution soccer. And maybe I can talk to you about RC Lens not actually being a great soccer team in France, because everyone talks about them being a good team, but they're probably going to get relegated next season. Top take, but it is what it is.
Well, they have Adam Buxton now, so they're definitely not getting relegated. He's going to lead Ligue 1 in scoring, so... hate to break it to you, Dolan, but they're actually pretty awesome now because they have Adam Buxa. So you can follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap. Also follow our Revolution Recap Instagram and Facebook pages. Be sure to follow the Bent Musket on Twitter at the Bent Musket and follow their work online at www.thebentmusket.com for year-round coverage and for Sam's article about a donut in Vermont. And be sure to follow our friends at the Rebellion. At The Rebellion on Twitter and go to nerebellion.org to learn more about them. I'm also pretty sure I forgot to tell you that our key takeaways were brought to you by The Rebellion, so I'm going to throw that in here now, even though I feel pretty bad about missing that at the top and I don't want to go back and edit it in. So be aware that they sponsored that segment. And also check out our sponsor, Golasso Kits, and use our promo code REVSRECAP for 15% off your order, golassokits.com. Make sure you are subscribed to iTunes or wherever you're listening, and if you could, please rate and review us 5 stars. We haven't had a good review in a while. Please do that. It helps people find looking for Revolution content find it. If you would like to support our podcast further, please consider becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/revolutionrecap if you are able. We will be back following next week's match against Vancouver. Until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.